Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, reaction, much of it negative, is flooding into city council as they consider Tepper Sports' request for $650 million in stadium renovations. Council passes a budget with a slightly reduced property tax increase, but your favorite road may not be resurfaced as a result. Another step toward making the Red Line commuter train a reality as the city tells the feds they will acquire Norfolk Southern's O-Line track. And the vice president comes to town again to tout Biden administration programs to help citizens feeling the crunch. Here to talk about those stories and more is WFAE political reporter Steve Harrison. He's here along with Joe Bruno, a reporter for WSOC-TV and host of The Political Beat on Sunday mornings. Alexandria Sands reports for Axios Charlotte. And we welcome a newcomer to the roundup, but no newcomer to news. Ryan Pitkin is co-founder and editor of Queen City Nerve. Thank you all for being here. Welcome.
Morning.
Morning. Morning.
It's radio. You must speak to be known. Let's begin with a story that broke late yesterday and was on WJZY's Queen City News. George Dunlap, the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission for the past 6 years, had something to say, a major announcement yesterday.
I am just delighted to say that this will be my last time for a while. So I'll make that announcement up front that I am not seeking the chairmanship for another term. It's been 6 years, and I'm beginning to feel that it's actually wearing on me.
Steve, I think this was a surprise, was it not? Why now? Why this announcement now?
Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise to me. I think so. What I've heard is that Commissioner Dunlap will stay on the county commission. I understand he is running. There is a national organization of elected county commissioners. He is running for a high position there. I think maybe that doing that as well as chairing the commission, which is, you know, a little bit like herding cats, I think may have been too much. Mm. But like you said, Mike, he's done it for 6 years.
And he's represented District 3, I think, for 16 years. And he made the announcement yesterday at a Focusing on the Future event with the Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles and the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance and the CLT Alliance Advocacy. Any significance to the location of that announcement yesterday?
I think just, you know, there were a lot of cameras there, make a splash. Mark Durell is the current vice chair. He may be in line to be chair after this.
Okay. So that's an announcement we weren't anticipating, but let's move on to something we've been talking about for quite a while now, at least a couple of weeks or so, because it was announced a couple of weeks ago that Tepper Sports had approached the city for $650 million for Bank of America Stadium renovations. The organization would kick in an additional $150 million, making it $800 million in renovations. And in exchange, the Panthers and Charlotte FC would agree to stay in Charlotte until at least 2040, possibly as long as 2045. Now, we knew this was coming because in previous discussions about the tourism tax, which would fund this request, officials were aware of the need to set aside at least $600 million for these renovations. So this week, City Council began seeking public comment on this proposal. Steve, what have they heard?
Well, there's two pieces going. Right after they announced the deal last week, they opened up kind of an online forum for people to put in comments. And the original plan was to have a public hearing on the night of the vote, June 24th. There were a significant number of council members who pushed to do it a week earlier. The idea is like, well, if we're going to hear from people, we need to spend several days, in theory, listening to what they've had to say before immediately, you know, instead of immediately doing the vote. The city has agreed to do that. So there will be a public hearing on Monday from 3 to 5 p.m.
Bank of America Stadium is nearly three decades old. It's one of the oldest in the NFL. So, Joe, remind us, what are they planning to do with $800 million?
A lot of back of the house stuff, updating loading docks, HVACs, infrastructure, but also some fan-facing things like improving the sound system, replacing the seats and cup holders, and creating a park-like atmosphere out the stadium where the community can use that space for watch parties and other gatherings.
And City Councilman Malcolm Graham told WBTV that the amount of the ask to the city, $650 million, is something a lot of constituents are having a hard time reconciling.
Getting more than an earful, whether it's the website, email, phone calls, are hopefully more input from the public.
Getting more than an earful, and that statement is backed up by a survey the city itself conducted. WFAE obtained the full results of that survey, which found that by a nearly 4-to-1 margin, respondents are against this. Steve, is that surprising?
I don't think that's surprising. I think the people in the city who want to have an NFL team are less likely to log on to their computer and fill out the survey. I mean, I think the people who are very much against these deals and subsidizing billionaires, et cetera, I think, you know, they're very motivated. It wasn't a surprise. What I thought was interesting was earlier this week, the city kind of gave a summary of what the results were. And they really glossed over the intense negativity that was actually in the survey. They characterized it as, well, some people wanted to spend the money on something else. And then the city said, well, because by law, we have to spend it on tourism. We can't do that. It was kind of seen as like, well, that problem is solved. They really didn't capture the spirit that the people who filled out this survey don't want them to do the deal. So they were kind of doing a public comment, but not really taking it very seriously. Well,
Alex wants to jump in here, but before I let her in, was that deliberate? Tracy Dotson was speaking to council about this. 85 people spoke to council in favor of this, 70 spoke against, and the survey that was conducted, the predominant number were against it. Was she deliberate in omitting that information?
Yeah, when I went through and did kind of tally marks on it, trying to put the survey, I found, you know, roughly 290, 300 people were really adamantly against it. I think about 80 were like very clearly, let's do this. I mean, yeah, I think the city did not want to put up a slide in speaking to city council and say, you know, and have to say, most people we talk to really don't like the deal. I mean, I don't think that was something they wanted to do. And this is something the city does often on other projects. They will do public input. You don't get to see the actual results. They always summarize them for council and the public. And, you know, when you try and get the full results, it often takes months. I had asked for Eastland results from 2023. They called me a month ago saying they were ready. So this is something the city does often, and it's really hard to see actually what people are saying.
How did you get your hands on the results of this so quickly?
So in this case, what happened was a group of council members started pushing during that meeting to get the full results. And then the city initially said, well, we'll give you a new summary. They said, no, they, you know, so and the city finally agreed to release the survey to the council members, and then it was easy to get.
Alex, your article on this on Axios Charlotte is headlined, Charlotte residents rip apart plans for Bank of America Stadium overhaul. You quote one person in the article as saying, for that price, we want a dome in capital letters, exclamation point, shade from the brutal sun, plus a chance to host the Super Bowl. Others wanted amenities like for things for soccer. Others said, renovate the team first. Sounds like they don't mind the money so much as they have different ideas about how to spend it.
Yeah, there were definitely, there were themes throughout, and the roof was a huge one. And Tracy Dotson told council this week that that would be hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's just not feasible right now. What I thought was really interesting is that the responses, people were very educated on the tourism taxes, and I think that what we keep hearing is we can't spend this, like we kind of can't spend this money elsewhere because we have to spend on the stadium because that's what it's for. But people were kind of making arguments for like museums, aquariums, parks, things people can actually afford because they're frustrated that they can't go to a Panthers game because tickets can be unattainable for them. So also the light rail was a reoccurring theme. They wanted to see it, the Silver Line, go to the airport. And then I also thought it was interesting, a lot of people wanted the stadium to have more of an emphasis on soccer and wanted that to be included in the renovation plans to make it feel more Charlotte FC and a little bit less focused on the Panthers.
Joe.
I do think what Steve said about the people who responded to the survey is also important. There's a sizable amount, I would even go as far as to say a silent majority of people who aren't just going to participate in this survey process because they aren't the type of people who will log on and submit their comments to the city of Charlotte. Maybe they're a little jaded, thinking that no matter what they say, they won't be listened to anyway. The Panthers, in general, having an NFL team in Charlotte is a popular amenity. People enjoy having the NFL in Charlotte. The team wouldn't sell out every single game if they didn't, even if those are sometimes opposing fans that are filling those seats. So, you know, it is important to keep in mind the type of people who do respond to these city surveys.
It's the it's the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, kind of what Joe said. I mean, let's say hypothetically that if the city council said no, they turned down the money and the Panthers left. And we did an online survey that says, how do you feel about that decision? I think it would be overwhelmingly negative. Why did you let the Panthers leave? Right. So, you know.
Ryan.
Right. And I think a huge part of the conversation that Steve mentioned earlier, but I think is important to emphasize, is sort of this feeling amongst a bunch of council members that this was a rush deal. And the idea that Dodson was falling back on is the fact that they're about to head into summer recess, and if they don't do this vote on June 24th, then she marked it as a 10-week delay, which is, you know, 2.5 months is a kind of a big deal when you're trying to get people on board for this sort of thing. And a lot of council members were questioning, you know, the timing on that as to, well, why are we announcing this? You know, this could have been in the pipeline earlier, could have waited till after the recess. So it really affects things, the fact that we're going on a summer recess right as we're trying to make this huge decision, or they are, not we, obviously.
Getting back to something you were talking about a second ago, Alex, it's not so much the money as it is other things that money could be spent on. And one of the people who spoke with WCNC TV, Grace Fendrick, started a petition on change.org to give residents who oppose the renovations a place to voice their concerns.
Finishing the renovations on the airport, you know, finally, would probably be a good use of some of these funds. Additionally, having the light rail go to the airport, because the majority of people that come to our city are going in and out of the airport. Interested parties should be investing in this, but taxpayers should not be investing in this because taxpayers are not getting a return on their investment.
I believe, Joe, you spoke with Grace Fendrick as well as Channel 36. The money for this is being withdrawn, as Alex alluded to a moment ago, from the tourism fund, which can only be used, allegedly, for tourism-related project, of which the stadium is one. So how prevalent?
And there are multiple tourism funds, right, too, to make things even more complicated. This tourism fund, the convention center fund specifically, can only be used for convention center upgrades, amateur sports, and stadiums with 60,000 or more seats in Charlotte, which Bank of America Stadium is the only one. There's another tourism fund that also has like rental car taxes go into that, which the city can use for Spectrum Center, museums, other cultural improvements in the city.
And there was another prevailing sentiment that people have expressed both at that meeting and elsewhere, which we'll get to in a moment, and that is welfare for the rich. That's an impolite way of putting it, but David Tepper is worth $20 billion, so why does he need our money? That was one of the comments which we'll talk about when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. That's why Steve Harrison is here. He's WFAE's political reporter. Joe Bruno is a reporter for WSOC-TV and host of their Political Beat program on Sunday mornings. Alexandria Sands, a reporter for Axios Charlotte. And Ryan Pitkin is with us, the co-founder and editor of Queen City Nerve. One of the comments that comes up, has come up here, and that comes up around the country when these requests for money from big-time sport, pro sports owners, and in this case, an owner of two teams plus the actual stadium. The Tepper organization owns Bank of America Stadium, even though I think the city owns the land, is the fact that here we have a billionaire, and David Tepper's net worth is estimated to be $20 billion, asking a city for $650 million, which is pocket change. And WBTV heard that exact comment when they went out onto the street to talk to individuals.
Why they wouldn't be able to foot the bill when the owner of the team is still worth $20 billion.
So, of course, you never spend your own money if you don't have to, and that's the rule of being a rich person, I suppose. But is this likely to be at all negotiable? Is this $650 million set in stone, Ryan?
It was some interesting conversations at the council meeting on Monday just about what we could get back as a city in terms of profit sharing, revenues being included in that. And David Abrams with Inter Sports was saying that, you know, cities don't, or the NFL doesn't like for cities to have a revenue sharing plan with teams, but they can do it in facilities. You know, City of Charlotte owns Spectrum Center, for example. But there was some conversation around, you know, the Green Bay Packers is known as this co-op, the city owned football team. And Abrams pretty much just admitted, I don't know how that works or how they operate that, but it's a mystery to me and everyone around, apparently. So there was some discussion around whether, you know, if we're going to put this much money towards a billionaire's project, why can't we get anything back out of it? But nothing really came to fruition, I don't think, out of that conversation.
Let me back up a second. David Abrams is a sports finance executive who's worked with this city on negotiations in the past with Tepper Sports and with the Hornets organization, and during last summer's unsuccessful attempt to lure a major tennis tournament from Cincinnati to Charlotte. He said, quote, it's rare to have American football and soccer played in the same building in an urban core, and that opportunity to keep both these teams here for two decades is unique around the country. And he added that the amount being considered, $650 million, is, quote, absolutely the appropriate amount. But he also says that we should be asking whether or not the team should be investing as much at the same time. Is that question being asked?
Kind of, with different words. The person asking the closest question to that, I would say, is Ed Driggs, who is really, he just wants more information about this proposed $421 million that Tepper Sports and Entertainment is saying that they will invest to maintain the upgrades that the city of Charlotte authorizes. And we don't really have a timeline or a whole lot of detailed information on how that number came to be, what that looks like, and when the city could expect those upgrades. So I think that is a reasonable and interesting question he poses.
Keith Cockrell, who is the Charlotte president of the Bank of America and the head of the bank's sports sponsorships division, seems to echo the sentiments of a lot of people in the hospitality industry who are in favor of this because they consider the stadium and the teams that play there and the events that take place there as economic generators.
We kept an NFL franchise for sure here in Charlotte because we know what the NFL means.
And that takes us to the question that is always raised about these public investments in professional sports. How do you calculate the return on that investment? What have economists had to say about this?
Economists seem to agree that if people aren't spending their money at a Panthers game, they're going to spend it throughout the rest of the week at other places, other restaurants. So they're still spending the same amount. It's just not as visible. They're not going to crowd all the bars at on one day of the week. When Beyonce comes, it's going to it's going to be more dispersed.
So in other words, it's only so much disposable income that people have. They'll spend it on the Panthers if the Panthers are here, and if not, they'll spend it someplace else.
Yeah, it's not going to be as visible.
It's nearly impossible, of course, to calculate the intangibles that people speak of when they talk about the impact of professional sports on a city. For instance, the beauty shots of Charlotte going into and out of commercial breaks on NFL games. You can't afford to buy that kind of advertising. And it's true that the Panthers certainly put Charlotte on the map, although they keep calling it Charlotte, North Carolina. We have yet to lose the North Carolina appendage. Are taxpayers being myopic if they don't recognize those intangibles?
Well, I think that's one thing that Councilman Driggs has tried to point to over and over, is that in these conversations about this tourism pool of money, a big stakeholder is the hospitality industry and representatives of that industry. And he is constantly trying to point people's direction toward, well, these people have our backs on this and want us to do this because they feel like they get a benefit out of it. He especially was making that point in a separate conversation about whether you can start using those tourism dollars for arts projects, and for example. But I think it's something that he's tried to point to, where maybe these folks who work at restaurants aren't all filling out these surveys, but their representatives are behind it. It's just an interesting sort of perspective that he seems to be pushing.
And go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just, you know, there was a meeting on Wednesday, the economic development meeting, which was only five council members. But like Joe said, Edriggs was the only one there who kind of asked some financial questions about this $420 million. That was the only detailed question about the deal. Basically, every other question was kind of council members asking the Panthers to please tell us how great this is. I mean, there was one, Dante Anderson, the mayor pro tem, asked a representative from the Panthers, will this make us a world-class city? And the Panthers said, yes. You know, it was not, I mean, I heard from other council members that they felt that the meeting was a little cringy, that they did not show themselves very well in that moment with questions like that.
Yeah. Joe.
There was one really good question. It was just posed to the wrong panel. They asked the hospitality industry, why 650 million? Why not 800? Why not 400? Panthers probably were the more appropriate people to ask that question to than, all the hotel executives and small business owners. But that was a good question. They just asked it to the wrong folks. And the folks they asked it to didn't really have an answer for them because they didn't negotiate the deal. But yeah, the questions were generally friendly to the Panthers and Charlotte FC. And, it kind of just goes into what we have been saying ever since this was introduced, that it appears there is support on council for this deal. And on the 24th, they'll take the vote and then go on vacation.
So there is this contingent of people who don't want to give money to a billionaire who could easily afford the $650 million that he's asking the city for. But the assistant city manager, Tracy Dotson, I don't know that this makes this any easier on those people that don't like this idea, said that the money is not going to Tepper Sports or to the Panthers or to David Tepper.
This money is going to the community asset and the facility, and the money actually goes to a lot of local community businesses.
So the argument here is that the stadium and the teams are assets and economic generators. How similar is this to the time, Steve, when council decided to fund construction of what is now the Spectrum Arena, even after taxpayers voted no to a referendum to build that building? In other words, is this going to happen no matter what kind of feedback council gets?
Yes, this will happen. This deal will be approved. There could be some no votes, but I think the only question is the timing. Are we going to do it on June 24th, or somehow will it get pushed back? But this deal will be basically something very similar will be approved.
That June 24th date we keep bringing up, that's when they're going to allegedly meet and decide on this, but also the time that they want to have a public meeting. And only five members said they wanted to hold a public hearing on the plan. One is scheduled for the night of the vote, June 24th, and those members want it earlier, among them Dimple Ejmyra.
We are talking about $650 million. So I know you said you don't want us to feel rushed, but I feel like we are being rushed. At least I do feel like that. So I just don't understand the urgency behind having to make a decision on June 24th and having a public hearing on the same day.
And Councilwoman Luana Mayfield agreed with Dimple. Renee Johnson, Victoria Watlington, and Tiawana Brown also said if the council doesn't have at least a week to consider public comments, the optics don't look good.
I think we put ourselves in a position where we are going to have a lot more scrutiny through media that are here regarding transparency and accessibility.
Now, the city manager, Marcus Jones, wants this decided on June 24th. Why was the hearing scheduled on the night of the vote? Is this being deliberately rushed? Joe.
They are also going to do a public hearing on Monday, the 17th, a special meeting, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. You can comment on this. And then the way it works is, in general, any item on the agenda that a member of the public can hypothetically sign up to speak to. So they will also have the opportunity to talk on the 24th. The one thing about the timing on this, I'm not really sympathetic to the council concerns on the timing, because it's not like this is the first time they are hearing this. The terms of this deal are the same exact terms I reported on a year ago through my sources. It hasn't changed much. They've been briefed in closed session. They have the power to mandate the city manager to do things. This is not a complete surprise to Charlotte City Council.
Ryan.
I don't disagree there. I do say, I will say that I just, it's always a pet peeve of mine when they announce a public forum from 3 to 5 on a Monday, because anyone with any sort of 9 to 5 job or even family or whatever your responsibilities are, 3 to 5 on a Monday is sort of a ridiculous time to try to ask for a person to come into the Charlotte Government Center and give their piece. So you can no longer do it over virtual for a public forum. So I just think that that's not the greatest solution for any one of these sort of conversations.
Of course, one of the reasons this is a fait accompli and will be done is because if the city says no to this and can't reach a deal, it's very possible, not necessarily likely, but possible, that the Panthers and Charlotte FC could start looking for a new home. And that's something that I don't think we would want to entertain. And that possibility no doubt played into this comment from Councilman Tariq Bakari when he spoke to WBTV.
Tepper Sports and Entertainment has committed to this city for 6 years now, and now our city is contemplating committing further to them.
And he says he will be voting for this deal, despite that comment.
Nearly every professional stadium deal with taxpayer money that I've ever seen or done diligence on is a bad deal for taxpayers. That doesn't mean it's impossible to make a good deal.
Again, he's going to vote for this despite that. Does that say to you that there will be negotiations about either the money or the length of the stay that the Panthers have committed to? What, 20 years, maybe 25? They have a 5-year out clause if they don't like how things are turning out. What's this going to look like on June 24th?
I really think it'll look the exact same as it does right now. I don't see them renegotiating in the next 2 weeks a deal that has been largely in place for a year now.
Okay. Moving on. Monday's busy city council meeting also include the council approving a budget for the next fiscal year, which begins in July. The first version of the budget included a property tax increase, but in the intervening weeks, they've been debating just how much that tax increase should be. What conclusion, Steve, did they reach?
So they voted, I believe it was 8-3, that the property tax increase will go from 1.5 cents to 1.37 cents, a very small amount. They restored, they had previously to lower the tax rate, taken out money from the capital improvement plan. They put that back, and instead they are going to pay for the small decrease with taking away money from road resurfacing.
Is that wise? Has anybody driven on our roads recently? I'm just asking.
I mean, like, if the sales tax referendum passes, which is one of the big reasons why they reduced the property tax rate, was to send a message to Raleigh that they're serious about this.
Yeah.
Then we're going to be getting roads everywhere, and they'll all have fresh pavement on them. So you could look at it that way. But yeah, it is. You're trading one thing for the other.
It's Charlotte Talks and the Local News Roundup on WFAE. City Councilman Malcolm Graham said it was public outcry that helped rescind some of the cuts to the capital improvement plan for funding things like sidewalks and the Corridors of Opportunity program and other infrastructure projects. Will there be any public outcry over the decision to take money away from funds for road resurfacing projects? I mean, it may be coming from the state at some point, but has anybody stopped at the stoplight at Kenilworth and East Boulevard recently? Your car could fall to China in that little pothole there.
I think the support for some of the strategic investment areas and corridors of opportunity and Vision Zero and things that were at risk of being cut originally, mm-hmm. restoring those, I think, was good optics to the point where they're like, all right, resurfacing, we'll take that instead of cutting all these other issues, all these other funding programs that are been key parts of everyone's platform in the last few years.
So what impact will this final budget have on the planned raises for hourly employees, for full-time employees, for employees of police and fire?
Well, there is, for City of Charlotte employees, I believe it is 4% cost of living. And then there's a merit pool that they also can, depending on their ability over the past year, that they will also see a potential small raise. And then for police and fire, the STEP plan is in effect for them. And I think there were some small tweaks to it.
The Charlotte Museum of History will receive $100,000 as part of this budget, but they had asked for $650,000. What do they want the money for? And will this one-time $100,000 allocation be enough? What will it do? How will they use it?
Anyway. Well, I think according to Terry White, CEO and president there, you know, since she came on, the museum has been doing better, but they have also are way behind on certain upgrades to their building. It's an older building, and they're sort of putting Band-Aids on things, to quote her in an actual WFAE piece. And her big thing was that she wants the museum to be part of this annual institutional funding that goes to 40 different organizations around the city. It's not really seen as to why that museum is not part of that list of 40 organizations. It includes everything from the big ones we all know to the Carolina Raptor Center. And you know, nothing against birds. I love the work they're doing at the Raptor Center, but it just seems like a very blatant miss.
And it does include the other museums like the Mint, the Beckler, and the Harvey Gantt Museum. This is all part of that $11 million arts fund that the city has established. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Norfolk Southern and the Red Line at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the Local News Roundup. Steve Harrison is here from WFAE News, as is Alexandria Sands, reporter for Axios Charlotte, Ryan Pitkin, co-founder and editor of Queen City Nerve, and Joe Bruno, reporter at WSOC-TV and host of their Political Beat program. A couple of weeks ago, Charlotte announced it had reached an agreement in principle with Norfolk Southern to use their tracks for the Red Line commuter train. This has been in the works for at least 150 years. It comes after years of Norfolk Southern saying no. Now these plans really do appear to be on track, pun intended. On Monday, the City Council notified the Surface Transportation Board, that's a federal agency, that it intends to acquire the O-Line from the railroad, and they filed the papers to do so. Alex, what allowed this to happen? What made the dam break here?
Well, we know Norfolk Southern has been negotiating behind the scenes with the City of Charlotte for a while. Meanwhile, CATS has been dusting off their design plans to get ready for this. But this filing is just a procedural step. But I think anything at this point feels pretty monumental because we've just been waiting for this for so long. And it'll be interesting to see what the price tag ends up being on this and then what the plan is to pay for it. I don't think we have made much progress towards getting a sales tax increase for these transportation projects. So I don't know if there'll be any rush to get that moving any faster than it's been.
If this leads to my next question, because the filing that they did with the Surface Transportation Board says that the city intends to, quote, acquire the tracks from Northern Southern. They're not using them on a rental basis. They're going to acquire them. They're going to own them. And it also says the railroad will be able to continue running freight trains on the track. So exactly, Steve, what does acquire mean? Are we purchasing these tracks, renting the right to use them for a specified amount of time? What's the deal here? Do we know?
I don't know. I am going to assume this is a lease deal. Joe, I mean, you've covered this. I assume that's what we're talking about, right?
I don't know. The city's under an NDA right now, so it makes it really tough to get information about what exactly they are thinking. I don't know if we know the answer to this question yet, if it'll be lease or own. And really all this filing said is that Charlotte will allow Norfolk Southern to run the freight on the line, and Charlotte won't compete against Norfolk Southern in the freight industry. They're exclusively going to use the rail for passenger commuter rail. But like Alex said, I mean, any development in this really feels like a huge deal, considering for so long there was just nothing going on. There looked like there was no hope for the project.
I know there's no connection to the city council's decision to cut road resurfacing from the budget to save some money on the tax increase, but the legislature has said that our transit plan relies too heavily on rail and not enough on roads. So we're saying we're not going to resurface the roads, but we have just acquired, or we're talking about acquiring, the O-line from Norfolk Southern. To get the train on that set of tracks is going to require a sales tax increase, which we have to get permission from the legislature in order to do. How do these two things square?
Wow, Mike, if the roads are so bad because they're not resurfaced and everyone's going to take public transportation, but... No, I don't know. Again, remember, roads are going to be a huge part of this package. And, you know, if we have to rebuild and reconfigure all these roads, they're going to be resurfaced more than the $1.3 million that the city trimmed from the budget. So I think the city is optimistic that they have a good chance at getting a sales tax increase authorized this session. And I think that all of this, the red line coming together, the slightly reduced tax increase, the work the hospitality industry is doing on the back end to advocate for it in Raleigh, is slowly making everything come together. But we'll see if it comes together before July 4th.
So at one point in the last several weeks, when it was announced that the red line was becoming more of a possibility, it was also announced that they had to cut funding for the silver line to Matthews, the one that runs from Matthews to Belmont through uptown. But hope seemed, Steve, to have resurfaced this week on saving that option. Where does it stand?
There's no firm written plan yet about any of this. The news is that Charlotte told Matthews the train won't come there. And now there's kind of an effort, like you said, to bring it back. If you do try and bring the silver line back, then other things are going to have to be cut. I mean, you can't do the silver line to the airport. You can't do the blue line to Ballantyne. So, you know, I think anything's possible. The only thing that's not possible is to do everything they planned to do initially, if that makes sense.
If you want proof that North Carolina is a battleground state, all you have to do is count the number of times that the president, the vice president, and members of the cabinet have been to North Carolina in the last couple of weeks. And on Wednesday, Vice President Kamala Harris was back in town on her so-called economic opportunity tour to highlight how the Biden administration has supported local communities across the country. And during a panel discussion at Johnson C. Smith University, moderated by former South Carolina State Representative Bakari Sellers, and the actor Michael Ealy. I'm not sure why he was there. She spoke about a new proposal that would help folks by prohibiting medical bills from being included in credit reports for those folks who have been crippled by debt.
This is going to be a game changer for so many people. And again, it's about debt is not just about a financial number. It's about how it weighs on people to keep them back when they're working hard and want to move forward. And so I'm particularly proud of what we've done on medical debt.
So is this something that has to work its way through Congress, which will never happen, or is it being accomplished through executive order? What is she talking about here? Who knows? Nobody knows?
I believe this was part of an executive order that was issued in advance of her visit. This isn't something I think they're calling on Congress to do.
Okay. She also spoke about soaring home prices, noting that owning a home is a major key to families being able to build wealth and to afford other needs.
You don't have to take out a loan. I'll take some equity out of the house to help you pay that tuition. Or if your child says, I want to start a business, you can say, honey, I can take some equity and out of the home and help you with some startup capital. Home ownership is one of the best ways that we achieve intergenerational wealth.
So again, I'm assuming this is an executive order. Clearly, there is a need for both of these things, but it's also an election year, and some of this has to point to Biden administration policies that have helped voters in the past and may do so in the future. So polls show Democrats have an uphill climb in North Carolina. If the purpose of that visit was to point out these things that they have done, will this resonate, Steve, with voters here?
I don't know if it will resonate. I think the one thing that we can say, if you remember, you go back to the election 2 years ago when Sherry Beasley lost and Democrats felt like the national Democrats kind of abandoned the state. That will not be the case, or has not been the case so far in North Carolina in 2024.
Joe.
Yeah, I can't go a week without hearing from the Biden campaign offering somebody to talk about some issue.
Right.
They are having at least one event a week. The vice president has been here five times now. The president is going to come back after the debate. They're playing to win North Carolina, investing a lot in the state. And at the same time, Trump doesn't have the operation in North Carolina that President Biden has right now.
Because it's an election year, and one of the candidates on the ballot, on the down ballot, is the lieutenant governor, Mark Robinson. He's running for governor, who has a history of making controversial statements.
Getting ready to get in trouble. Called to be led by men.
Nobody owes you anything for slavery. If you want to tell the truth about it, it is you who owes. Here's something else I'm not supposed to say. Ain't but two genders.
There's no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any child about transgenderism, homosexuality, any of that filth. And yes, I called it filth.
Well, now it's being reported that in 2018, during a radio interview on a Christian nationalist online program, he insinuated that the U.S. government was involved in both the attack on Pearl Harbor and the death of U.S. General George Patton as part of a conspiracy that he says in which we wanted to help the USSR's Joseph Stalin. He said it, quote, really calls into question the motives around our entire introduction into World War II.
I'm not prepared to say our government intentionally set Pearl Harbor up, but when you take it and look at the totality of it and look at the way FDR completely disregarded the fight in Japan and focused all of his energy was focused on a way for us to get to Europe, and not just to get to Europe, but to get over there to help the guy he called Uncle Joe. And once we got over there and helped Uncle Joe and lost all those men helping Uncle Joe, Uncle Joe turned right around and said, you're not my friend. You're not our buddy. The United States is not you're not our pal. Get out of here. Let us take over this country. And we basically let them do it.
Yeah, for a guy who went to UNC Greensboro with the aim to become a history teacher, this is a somewhat twisted version of history. And he made those comments back in 2018 before the Republican Party had become the party of conspiracy theorists. So what should we make of this, Joe? Why are these comments emerging now from a publication called The Daily Mail, which is out of the UK? Why would it even be of interest to them?
I think between now and November, you will hear or attempt publication. The Democratic Party will attempt to make sure that you hear every single radio interview Mark Robinson has ever done in his life. And there is a lot of material out there where he takes positions that may make some people scratch their head. In this case, what the Robinson campaign is doing is kind of, laying low. You might notice Robinson doesn't do a whole lot of media interviews anymore. He isn't really coming out as forcefully on some issues as he has in the past. And so what the Democratic Party is going to do is make sure that some of his other past comments are out there so voters have a better picture of who Robinson might be.
Meanwhile, speaking of politics, there was a South Carolina primary this week in which Nancy Mace, the incumbent congressional representative from one of the districts in South Carolina, beat the Kevin McCarthy-backed candidate. What's the significance of that, Joe?
So this was Kevin McCarthy's revenge tour. He heavily backed Catherine Templeton in this race because Nancy Mace was one of the few people who voted to oust McCarthy. And Mace ended up winning by 27 points, and she said she's not going to change a thing.
And I guess I have a minute left here, but I guess the big news out of this for York County residents is that the result of the sheriff's race will be a runoff. Five candidates were in the race. Now it's headed for a runoff between Michael Belk, the deputy chief of Rock Hill Police, and Tony Breeden, a retired Rock Hill Police Department lieutenant. Well, how close is this between the two of them?
Well, there are five candidates. You needed 50% for there not to be a runoff. They both were 26-25%. What's interesting is South Carolina has an open primary. So if you're a Democrat, you can vote in the Republican Party or vice versa. You could choose. So Democrats were encouraging people to vote in the Republican primary so they could have a say in the sheriff. And one of the candidates they backed was Michael Belk. So we'll see if Democrats can put Michael Belk ahead in York County.
So is there a Democratic candidate in November to run against? There's not.
There is not. No.
There is not. It's the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You also reported this week, Joe, on a squatter bill being created in the North Carolina legislature to remove squatters from homes. What was the impetus for this?
We've had several different high-profile squatter incidents in our area. Davidson Mayor Rusty Knox's parents experienced squatters. And there isn't really an easy way to get squatters out of your home right now. You have to go through the court system, and that could take months for there to be a resolution. So Representative John Bradford is proposing a 48-hour timeline for police to remove the squatters from your home if the claim can be verified.
Everybody has been talking, and we spent a good portion of the show today talking about Tepper Sports' request for hundreds of millions of dollars for stadium renovations. Not as many people are talking about the large donation made by the David and Nicole Tepper Foundation to a local nonprofit. They're giving $3 million to an organization called Nourish Up. What does Nourish Up do?
It's a merge of loaves and fishes and friendship trays. So they give groceries and meals to people in Mecklenburg County.
And they have a $23 million capital campaign, which is aimed at expanding their nutritional programs across the county. Here's what Nicole Tepper told WCNC-TV about why they chose to support Nourish Up.
Food insecurity has been one of our main pillars through the foundation for years and years and years. And having to be able to have this platform and be here in Charlotte and in Mecklenburg County and be able to see what Nourish Up is doing and to be a part of that with them is just incredible.
She called Nourish Up the future for food banks. At the risk of appearing cynical, however, was this gift planned before Tepper Sports floated the idea of the city giving them $650 million for stadium renovations? Or is this entirely separate? Joe?
The Teppers do a lot of good for the community. It doesn't always get reported. This isn't out of the ordinary for the Teppers to make a large donation like this.
Okay. Now, you also reported this week, I have no time left, about Whataburger out of Texas suing Whataburger out of North Carolina. The difference is that Whataburger here has hyphens between the what and the A and the burger. And they call it Whataburger 13. They started in 1969. Why this infringement, copyright infringement lawsuit now?
To summarize quickly, that Whataburger with no dashes claims the dash Whataburger is violating some sort of long-standing agreement between the two restaurants. And with Whataburger with no dashes planning to enter the dash territory, they said that this all needs to be sorted out.
Lord. Now, does Whataburger with the dash use Mrs. Dash's spicing seasonings? Never mind. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. That's Joe Bruner, reporter and for WSOC-TV, host of their Political Beat program, Alexandria Sands, reporter for Axios Charlotte, Ryan Pitkin, co-founder and editor of Queen City Nerve, and Steve Harrison, political reporter for WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.